All right.
How exciting.
it is. All right. Well, welcome everyone to another episode of the Climate Action Homes podcast. I'm so excited tonight because we're going to be talking with Erin Joy Murphy about native plants and restorative landscape. And before I go into that, I'm going to do a couple announcements, let you know other things that are coming up. But first, hi, Erin.
Hi, thanks for having me, Joan. This is exciting.
Yeah, it is. And thank you everybody who is joining us. If you're watching this on Facebook, you can go to climateactionhomes.com and under events, you can register. And that way you can pop in to the Zoom room with us and you can interact in the chat. And after the first half hour, we'll stop the recording and just have a little networking discussion.
I see some friends, Katrina and Sabrina. That's exciting. Hi.
is awesome. That's great that you have rhyming friends that are joining
Yeah,
too.
they planned that ahead of time before.
Yeah, right. We have a great group of folks. So if you're in the room, feel free to introduce yourself in the chat. Any questions you have, feel free to put those in there. So before we get going, I just want to let you know about what all we have coming up. So I'm Joan Gregerson. I am a real estate agent with York Castle Realty. And the Climate Action Homes podcast is really a way for me to marry my background, which is all environmental work, with thinking about how helping people create homes that are make a positive impact for the planet. And I think that when you Your home is one of those places you can do something really big. And so, as part of the podcast, we interview people that will help you do something really big, which is what we're going to be talking about tonight with Erin. Also want to let you know that next week, March 14th, we'll be talking about Paul Kreischer. He's the producer of a TV series that's now on PBS, and it's called Heart of a Building. And Paul and I both have background in building energy efficiency. And so what he's been doing is going out and interviewing people who are creating these super energy efficient, great, have all kinds of different benefits in addition to being a low carbon footprint. And he's going to be talking to the people that created these designs and asking them why and how they did that. So I think that's going to be a neat one. That's March 14th. On March 16th, we have a first-time home buyers course that is creating a success game plan. The market now is pretty crazy, but all that means is like that you need to bring it, and so we're going to help you. So Chad Bergman and I, Chad is a lender. We're going to help you create a game plan so that you can be successful creating this kind of really cool home that you envision for yourself. And then on April 11th, Christine Brinker is going to be with us talking about electrifying your home. And that's a neat one too. How to just figure out where what your carbon footprint is and go after all the different aspects, electric heat pump and your vehicle and your appliances, all that good stuff. All right. So we got that going. And so with that, let me bring Erin back on here. And so I'm really excited about this topic. I worked for a while as a community organizer with People and Pollinators Action Network. And so the whole idea of what's going on with pollinators and how our choices impact our whole ecosystems is really near and dear to my heart. And so that's why I invited Erin on to talk with us. So Erin helps people in the Denver area transform their yards into sanctuaries for birds, pollinators, and people. She uses native plants, native grass lawns, and rain gardens to help people connect with the land they live on. And what I love is this next thing is that Erin also advocates for native plant landscaping at the city and state level and teaches holistic classes for homeschoolers. So in the Green Team Academy, where what the nonprofit that I started, we talked about having a way to help people at the personal, community, and policy level. And that they really have to do all three. If you just choose policy level, it's going to be so depressing and so slow. It's just going to be miserable. If you just tell people like focus on your habits, that also is going to be really feel like you're never doing enough. So, you know, by actually having a toe in at all levels, it's fun, it's exciting. And that's what we're going to hear about how Erin did all this. So Erin, would you start by just telling us, how did you get into this regenerative, restorative landscape design that you've decided to make your life's work at this point?
Thanks, Joan. I came to it from an unusual direction. I took a permaculture design course a few years ago, maybe 5 years ago, 5 or 6, through the Denver Permaculture Guild. It was really amazing and it lit me up. It was very inspiring. The course talks a lot about how to garden in a way that's working with nature, with the way that nature works. And I was very excited by it, but the course also focused pretty heavily on food production, on agriculture. And that's never really been my thing. I've always been very passionate about habitat restoration and the wilderness and the creatures, and especially the plants. So I did various things with it over time. I worked for an amazing permaculture landscaper in Boulder called Lusciously Local, Joe Lustig, and I lived in a little eco-village for a while. But mostly my focus was on helping people connect to nature in more of an intuitive, playful, body-based, sensuality-based way, because that was what I was really passionate about, is the relationship underneath everything between you and the ecosystem. And so I was doing a lot of counseling and community organizing around that. And then all I can see is my face right now, by the way. I don't know.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's
can
perfect.
Can you come back?
No, keep going. Keep okay. going.
I'd love to be able to see your face too, but I guess other people are watching me, so I have to keep that in mind.
Right.
Okay. Not a Zoom conversation. Sorry. Baby's first podcast, everyone.
Doing awesome. Woohoo.
Okay. So I was doing a lot of this eco-sensuality work, like leading these retreats and activities that was about really helping people ground in, slow down in nature and, you know, talk to trees and feel the wind against your cheek and all that stuff. And it was great, but there was also a way that it became apparent to me that it was colluding with my avoidance or escapism. So what I mean by that is the part of me that wants to dance naked in a meadow, but doesn't necessarily want to do the hard work of relationship with Earth. Like if we think of our partnership with the Earth as a partnership, right? Just like any partnership, it's not all the fun date nights. It's also taking out the garbage and doing the dishes and that part of my life is really lacking in terms of actually like boots on the ground. What can I actually do to help nature, to rewild? Like, you know, that's a very popular word, but what does it actually mean to rewild, like in your front yard? Is it just letting the dandelions go? What is it? So I quit my ecosomatic counseling and community work and I started praying, because that's the way I approach things, not to a specific God, but just for guidance. And I got this sense of like, I want to dig into the earth. You know, I want to dig, I want to plant, I want to do something like this. And I just started researching, like, how can I use my permaculture design experience and my gardening and herbalism experience in a way that's actually doing what I want to do, which is restoring habitat, not just growing food, not just making lawns look pretty. And I found a reference to native plant gardening and how bees and bugs are interdependent with native plants, and therefore native plant gardening is habitat restoration in a suburban setting. And it was like all the light bulbs went off. I just started researching like a crazy person. I've spent 2 years at this point researching like a crazy person, learning everything that I can about native plant landscaping in this area and what that really means and how to do it well. So I was able to weave in my design experience from my permaculture degree and my gardening experience and everything else into something new that not very many people are doing so far. There are a few other native plant landscapers in the area, but for me, it was something that kind of got built from the ground up.
Which is a great analogy, building from the ground up, because that is kind of what we're doing here. Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is so cool because, you know, a couple of the other podcast guests that we had, which Katrina Karczewski and Linnea Bjorkman, were really talking about food gardening and, you know, and how important that part of it is and having a relationship with your food. And what I love about this is that, you know, that everybody can take their own passion and you don't have to fit in a box. You know, you don't have to do everything. You can do the part that you really love. I don't know. I think a lot of people who have recently moved here to Colorado do not understand that we are a high mountain desert, but we are a desert. And this, my background doing building energy engineering, we did a lot of research into like the energy use and the water use and how it relates here in Denver to other places in the country. And Denver has one of the highest per capita water usage. And it's a lot because of this tradition of having lawns in a desert. Whereas like if you're a place where there's like saguaro cactus, you understand you're in a desert and might think twice about having a lawn. But so the whole thing of lawns here being a cultural, you know, something about the other reason that I really wanted to have you on, Erin, was in my real estate, one of my real estate groups. I'm pretty new to real estate. And somebody posted, "Hey, does anybody know here somebody that could rip out a lawn?" And I'm like, "Oh, that sounds good." And put in a new one. I'm like, "No." If you're going to the, you know, the trouble of ripping it out, this misplaced thing. So that was one of the reasons that I wanted to make sure that I found people like you and am able to let people know there is another option. So what are you, what do you tell somebody who comes, who says like, "I've got this lawn and I know it's not right and it's a big project and I don't even know where to start." Like how do you kind of catch people so they don't get overwhelmed and are actually able to make progress going forward?
Well, the first thing to think about is what was growing where you live before colonization. So there are places in Colorado that are high mountain desert. I live in Denver, and here it would have been short grass prairie, actually. So what would have naturally been growing here is these beautiful short grasses, blue grama and buffalo grass primarily, and then wildflowers throughout it. And then in areas that have more water, like along creeks and streams, there were cottonwoods and willows and chokecherries, hackberries, things like that. So if you start to take it back to what was there before, you know, you're not going to be able to get to some kind of pristine state, but it does help inform the question of, number one, like, how do I landscape in this area in a way that is low maintenance, in a way that actually connects me with the healthy state of this ecosystem? And then B, that also helps orient you towards, how do I support the pollinators, the birds, the biosphere of this area that, and we can talk about this a little bit later, you know, that has evolved to be interdependent with the native plants of this area. So if someone from here in Denver wants a lawn, but maybe they don't want their lawn that is using 500 gallons of water a week or something like that. And it is about half of our municipal water goes to lawns, which is just really ridiculous. It's 40 something percent. And that is a growing concern because the Colorado River is going down and drought, you know, mega drought looks like something that's going to impact the west of the United States for a very long time, possibly. So the first thing to know is that you actually can have lawns here, but what we do is we work with the kind of short grass lawn options that would naturally be growing here. So buffalo grass and blue grama actually make great lawns. They are a little different than regular lawns, and we can talk about that if you'd like to, but they function very well as lawns. They look very beautiful. And with buffalo grass, you don't even have to mow it because it naturally grows really short. Mm. So all those things they're growing in popularity. People are learning more about them. There's more varieties being developed that more closely suit our lawn aesthetic, if that makes sense. But it's not actually impossible to have a eco-friendly lawn here in Denver that is really nourishing the biosphere, as well as taking you back to a real sense of place here. But it would be different for someone who's really living in the desert.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. And so that if we can redefine lawn, so maybe that's the thing, is if people love their lawns, then let's just, so maybe that's a strategy. It's don't tell people you can't have a lawn, just change the composition of the plants that you actually have in your lawn.
You can either change the type of lawn so that it's more xeric and ideally native. You can replace it with, you know, beautiful perennial plants that require even less water and do even more for that, for the biosphere. Or you can also downsize, because, you know, bluegrass lawns are great for things like really high traffic areas, right? So you can also just have a smaller area that's for your lawn and then do more with the rest of the area, if that makes sense. So yeah. There are options.
And I had the opportunity to attend one of the talks by Doug Tallamy. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really interesting, the idea that, you know, if we want to restore wildlife, restore habitat, that if we can do it ourselves, if we can all just be kind of this army of nature restoration people, right? Yeah. On the property that we already have, that could then create these pathways for pollinators and these connections. So instead of just focusing, I shouldn't say just, but, you know, protecting forests and that kind of thing is great. But with the amount of space that is in cities now and in suburbs, that to think of that being the place where we create these pollinator highways, and that's this really ripe place. Plus you have people that are there to take care of it. So I thought that was kind of a cool idea to show the abundance of ways that we could do it, instead of this kind of constrictive feeling. It's like, wow, a lot of people have yards and there's a lot of people that care. And so that means that there's a lot of people that could really make a big impact.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's two things I want to say about that. One is that, you know, your theme is climate action homes. And when we talk about climate action, what comes up for most of us is the sense of like, oh, we're doomed, right? And what can I really do as a cog in this machine? And the thing is, you can't, you know, restore the orca population in your backyard, right? Like, you can't single-handedly solve plastic pollution in your backyard, probably. But you can provide a very, very valuable ecological hotspot for local birds, butterflies, bees, you know, and the rest of the biosphere that depends on our local insects. And I think that that's really empowering, you know. And it also, like, it brings us into relationship with our yard in a way that I think is also critical for the larger climate picture, because the larger climate picture is interwoven with the fact that we have this nature is over there and we are over here, sort of split in all of our society. You know, like, we really don't work with nature in any aspect of our day-to-day way that we run civilization, right? We haven't figured out how to do that yet. And we have to figure out how to do that, how to have a circular economy, et cetera, et cetera. So this is a different way of approaching it. This is saying, like, you know, this homegrown national park idea is saying, those little wild areas that we have are important, but they're so small and they're so isolated from each other that they can't actually maintain large enough populations of pollinators or birds that can weather just the variations of year-to-year fluctuations in population size. But what we can do is, if we link them through these corridors where they're able to live among us, live among people, and there's no reason that they can't, then we preserve that integrity of biodiversity and basic ecological health.
It is pretty fast. I mean, that's the other thing that I, in that when Doug Tellamy, and he's got a couple books, but, you know, talking about how, okay, we planted this thing, and then by the next season we started seeing, you know, this kind of moth or caterpillar or whatever. And then because of that, we started seeing these kind of birds. And is that, when you're talking about people really being in relationship with nature on their own property, like, how, what's an example of, I mean, obviously you've in teaching this eco-sensuality, like, gosh, I don't think I've ever even heard that term. I want to take all of your classes. So maybe you'll do that occasionally for us. But, you know, how do you see people, what would be an example of someone who, you know, comes to you and starts talking about this? How are you seeing people have that kind of relationship, and how does that actually unfold?
That's a great question. Trying to think, I had like 10 different thoughts while you were talking, but I'll just go with that last one. I know one thing I wanted to say before I answer that. You mentioned the moths coming quickly. If you think about our suburban areas from the perspective of, say, a bird, about 80% of our plants are non-native and therefore don't host native insects. So it's really like our cities are a desert to pollinators and to birds. So if you just imagine, like, you're a pollinator or a bird just looking for enough food to survive on, you're going to be drawn to any yards where that's available. So the answer to your question about relationship is a really good question. I think that we get kind of numb to our yards, and we get kind of disconnected from nature just because our yards don't feel like nature, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, when you're in the forest, let's say you go camping for 3 days and it's quiet and you're just listening, you might really start to feel like, A, like you're relaxing, and there, as if a busyness or a franticness inside of you is draining away and you're just being there in your body. And two, you might start to feel like there is this actual two-way connection between you and the land, or between you and nature. And it doesn't have to look a certain way or have a certain kind of name or a certain title. But, like, even now, if you just imagine or feel or turn your attention to the fact that the earth is underneath you, and just take a deep breath, kind of let yourself, like, settle into your pelvis, maybe move your hips back and forth a little bit, bend your knees, just notice that, like, gravity is holding you, and feel that gravity and feel that connection, you might be able to sense that there is a kind of two-way connection between you and the earth. And that might sound too woo to you, and maybe it doesn't feel exactly like that, but I'm sure that on some level, some part of you knows what I'm talking about, that there is a kind of way of that we are connected to nature, that we are part of nature, that is bigger than words. And it's something that we really only feel when we slow down, when we pay attention. So restorative landscaping is about just doing that, about slowing down and paying attention to your yard and asking yourself questions like, how does my body want to be in this yard? You know, what does the earth want in this yard? What are the feelings and the desires and the strange knowings that just come up when I slow down enough to listen and us to come into an actual relationship? And this is what Indigenous people across the world knew how to do and still know how to do, but something that our very traumatized, colonized white society has forgotten. And we've created these suburban bubbles where we're cut off from nature, where it's easy for us to forget that we belong, where it's easy for us to forget that we're just, you know, animals in the forest, right? Because we think we're emperors on top of our skyscrapers. But that's a very lonely life, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because my background, my degree was electrical engineering. Mm-hmm. And then I later learned meditation and I was like, oh my gosh, it's electrical engineering. But you know, those things of being grounded, you know, and I always think like when I feel kind of flustered, I think of myself of like all static electricity, like, but then when you sit and like one of the practices I learned was like having three points on the ground, you know, that's very much like the plugs that we use that have, you know, a hot, cold, and a ground. And so I think you're right that people can feel that. So this is really cool, Erin. I'm so excited about the work that you're doing and bringing this body focus and asking the earth. And I think it seems like you're like cutting right to the chase, because I think what a lot of people get waylaid is, I'm not a designer. Like, am I going to have to draw stuff out and measure it? And so, you know, you might at some point do that, but trusting that you as your animal in your forest, that's the, whatever the person in their yard, that you have some feelings and some knowings and some desires and some connections that are wanting to be made, and kind of starting with that and then going to the more detailed rather than trying to create a space that then gets you to that thing.
Exactly. Yeah, I do work with a lot of very engineering minded, you know, more mental folks, right? Who it's much more of like a conversation about facts and benefits and things like that. But even from then, even if you're someone who really doesn't want to slow down to look at the earth and dream, which is another phrase I use a lot, there's still something that came from, like that desire to nurture your landscape came from somewhere. That desire to have a nurturing landscape came from somewhere, right? So how do we stay with like the heart of what is important there?
Right. Right. Yeah. I always call myself a recovering engineer. So I'm in recovery. All right. So Erin, if people want to get in touch with you, what is kind of the best way to find you? How could people find you?
My website is restorativelandscapedesign.com. And I'm also on Nextdoor, Yelp, Google, Facebook, all of that. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, great. Well, thank you so much for this talk. And it's just like such an exciting thing that this business that you've created and being of service to people and pollinators and to the earth and plants and all that good stuff. So really glad that you're out there as a resource for folks. And is there any one last thing that you wanted to mention before we wrap?
No, just thank you everyone for being interested and being curious, and please stay for the Q&A if you'd like to talk more.
Yeah. Awesome. Great. Okay. So just as a reminder that next week we have Paul Kreischer talking about the PBS series that he created, Heart of a Building. And then we're doing our first time homebuyers class on March 16th. And then we have Christine Brinker talking about how to electrify your home as part of reducing your carbon footprint on April 11th. We'll probably have a couple other ones popping in there. And yeah, thank you everybody for joining. And I'll sign off here and we'll continue with our Q&A. So see you soon on the next Climate Action Homes podcast.